This is an Equity Mates Media podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi everyone, it is Bryce here. Just dropping in before the episode kicks off. If you listen regularly to us or follow us on social media, then you would have heard us talking about our book, Get Started Investing. Incredibly exciting times for us, Ren.
That's right, Bryce. You know, we've been doing this show for 4.5 years. We've spoken to over 150 experts. We've heard so many stories from people in the Equity Mates community. And what we've tried to do with this book is summarize that all, condense as many lessons and learnings as possible to really make this book a resource for anyone at any stage of their investing journey. And, you know, included in it is a bunch of lessons that we wish we knew when we were getting started investing. So hopefully you can learn from our mistakes, and this book can help you avoid some of the investing pitfalls that Bryce and I have fallen well and truly headfirst into.
That's right. So Equity Mates has been free for a long time now, and anything in the Equity Mates Media Network is free. And if you have always wanted to be able to say thanks for what we're doing, then this is a great opportunity for you to do so by pre-ordering a copy of the book. The link is available in show notes to Booktopia. And we would very much appreciate if you were able to buy this for yourself, your friends, your family, anyone that you know wants to get started on their investing journey. So very exciting for us, Ren, but let's get stuck into the show.
Equity Mates.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you can.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode. We are continuing our CEO series, where we speak to some of the best CEOs and founders from Australia, New Zealand, around the world. And for a while, you know, we've been fascinated with some of the great companies coming out of New Zealand that are listed over here in Australia. And we're going to continue that today with a New Zealand-based CEO with an ASX-listed company.
Correct. It is our pleasure to welcome Grant Straker to Equity Mates. Grant, welcome.
Hi, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Grant is the co-founder and CEO of Straker Translations, an ASX-listed language translation service. Since co-founding Straker with his wife, Maren, in 1999, the company has grown to $30 million in revenue and a $130 million market cap. Prior to Straker Translations, Grant was a paratrooper in the British Army. So we're going to be spending the next little while going through some of the company basics, growth and competition, then closing out with a discussion around leadership and people and culture as always. So, Ren, let's kick it off.
Yeah, so Grant, to start these interviews, we always like to hear the CEO or the founder describe their own company in their own words. So to kick us off today, what is Straker Translations?
So we are an AI-driven productivity enhancing platform in the $50 billion plus language services industry. We offer language services through our platform and a global services network to commercialize our innovation. And fundamentally in this industry, AI is going to have an impact that's going to make humans more productive. And we've built a platform that commercializes that and encapsulates a huge amount of unique technology to give us an advantage.
Now, Grant, you're a Kiwi, but before founding Straker, you were a paratrooper in the British Army. So how did all that happen, and then what led you to actually founding Straker?
Yeah, so I went to the UK as a teenager with my family. My dad got a job over there, and I went there late 70s, early 80s. And along with a couple of my brothers, we joined the Army. Both my parents were actually previously in the Air Force, strange enough. So we all joined the Army. And look, it was a fantastic adventure. I feel sorry for a lot of the people in their 20s now who get locked into desks and sitting in front of computers coding. When, you know, I got to do incredibly exciting stuff from, you know, traveling the world when it was hard to travel the world, you know, as a young person. I know now there's cheap flights everywhere, but it was really difficult. So you got to do all these exciting things. I did some crazy stuff. I sort of part of a few of us were the first people to ever cycle across continental USA in mountain bikes. For example, I was sort of at the Berlin Wall when the wall came down. So I got to have some really fantastic experiences. And then when I came back to New Zealand, I left the Army and came back in the 90s. I thought I'd better get serious and figure out what I was going to do. So I went to study engineering. And that engineering sort of took me into coding. I was working for a gas company. I had to solve some problems with just gas flows and write a program that could figure stuff out. And I found out that Excel wouldn't do it. And I looked underneath the hood and found VB Basic and taught myself that, and then started to write some programs that everybody wanted to use in this company. And the IT guys asked me if I could enhance these, and I just thought it was a bit strange that they were the IT guys and I just taught myself. So I thought I'd better go on a course. So I went on a course to learn to do this properly. And then the company asked me if I would come and consult for them. So I gave up my job and started this, and then this is sort of late 90s, and I actually met my wife at sort of around about that time in a cross-dressing bar of all places.
nice.
it was someone else's 30th birthday. And it was only a couple of months after that I'd got this contracting gig, and then people wanted me to do different things, and then she could see what was going on, and we'd only known each other a couple of months, and so we actually just sort of started the company then. So that's sort of how it started.
And so the company was founded in 1999 and became a translation service company in 2010. So I guess the question is, what happened in those 11 years?
Yeah, look, so we started off sort of initially doing, you know, consulting as the .NET boom sort of took off, and then built a product. We had an option with Tourism New Zealand to build a platform for them to manage all their multilingual content before the days of WordPress and commercial content management systems. So we built this platform. We then turned that into a saleable licensed product. So again, if you look at what you had to do back then, it was a different world. You had to build a product that was installed in servers inside of buildings around the world, or, you know, inside of customers' premises, and support all these different platforms. You couldn't just deploy it on the web and push a button and it's in the cloud. It was really quite hard. So we built this platform and we sold it around the world, and we had sort of more of a lifestyle company, but it was also, for my wife and I, we'd never run a company. So it was like an apprenticeship, a 10-year apprenticeship on how to run a company, living off your cash flows, and you know, your customers were your funders. And I think that's actually stood us in really good stead as we've gone on to be a much bigger company.
Yeah, well, speaking of size, I'm just having a look at your product set, and there's plenty going on. So for those that may not have heard of Straker before, are you able to explain, I guess, broadly what you do offer and what problem you're solving? And do you translate podcasts?
Yes, no, we definitely translate podcasts. Yeah, we do. So what we're fundamentally doing is we're helping the world to communicate. So people have got to the translation language services industry is enormous, and It's because cross-border trade, people need to translate legal documents. If they're doing a contract, they need the marketing. If you're a manufacturer of equipment, you need all the marketing stuff put into different languages. There's cross-border deals going on where there's due diligence and all those sorts of things happening. And now there's media. There's all these TV programs, et cetera, Netflix and the likes that all need subtitles. So, or voiceovers. So what we have done is figured out how to automate the process flows. So again, so it's not manual, it's not getting shipped around in spreadsheets, et cetera. There's a lot of integration with APIs and connectors that streamline the flow of content. And then what we're doing on top of that is we've got this ability where we've been able to map the commercial gains that you get, or the productivity gains that you get in through AI and through technology, to a commercial outcome for us and for our customers. And that basically means speeding up the humans but producing just as accurate translations. So the customers win, it takes less time. Everybody now wants to do things really quickly. And also, because of that speed gain, we're able to get a much higher margins at our side.
So, Grant, the last 5 years have been a pretty impressive growth story. Strake has grown revenue from $10 million in FY16 to $31 million in FY21, and guiding for $50 million in FY22. And at the same time, the global market for language services is booming. Expected to be $67 billion in 2022, supported by a lot of those tailwinds that you touched on earlier, the increased volume of content, the increased volume of cross-border trade, all of that. So I guess the question is, for a CEO and a founder looking at this massive opportunity set that that is there in the language translation service, how do you go about actually building a strategy and trying to capture more and more of this market share?
Yeah, and that is a great question in terms of positioning where we're at. And so our strategy is very much that this industry is going through disruption, and that there's really four quadrants, if you looked at a typical Gartner-type chart, where you've got a lot of legacy players. There's 20,000 small translation companies around the world, say under sort of 50 million, but the average size is probably closer to 5 million in revenue. And these guys don't have technology. They've relied on a geographical close relationship to get their customers. And now customers want more technology, and they want a global provider, not just one language in each country. So that segment's really under pressure. Now, I call it personally the dying zone. I think that they're really going to struggle to survive through this technology avalanche. And you've got big legacy got players. So there's probably 40 companies that's sort of above 50 million in revenue or 100 million. They've got the scale to deliver for a large corporate, but they don't have the technology. So for them to adapt, they're going to have to cannibalize their existing business models. And we've got a big leap on those guys because we've thought about our technology from a long way out. And then you've got some technology players who are in another quadrant. They've got technology, but they haven't quite got scale. And then you've got the scale and technology quadrant, which has not got many players, and we think we're moving into that quadrant now because we've got that scale about, 50 million of sort of revenue number, but we've also got the technology. And that played out in the recent sort of big win we had with IBM, where we got a global supply agreement with IBM. And what that proves as part of that process was that companies will now pick innovation over legacy kind of scale players. So we think that now it's about how quickly large organizations and large consumers of translations start to switch to innovation type players, and we want to have our foot down with using our global scale and our team and all the countries out there driving revenue.
So, Grant, I guess the question is then for retail investors and everyone listening at home is, how big can Straker actually be?
Well, it's a huge market opportunity, and we certainly want to be one of the large players. The largest player in the industry is about $1 billion in revenue.
Wow, okay.
Right, so it's 50 billion plus market size, right? 50, 60 billion, it's still not much. So you could be a 100 million, 200, 300 million dollar revenue player, and you're still not a big player in terms of market share. So I guess we've got to take some steps on that and just see what plays out over the next year or two. We've just raised some capital. We're very well positioned now to accelerate our next round of growth. I think that number, or how big can we be? I would certainly like us to be in the top 10, I guess, if I looked at the industry, and that would mean that you're getting your revenues probably over 300 million eventually, and then really driving up.
So Grant, there's a few points that you touched on that would love to follow up there: the IBM partnership, the capital raise, and competition. So if we start with the IBM partnership, I imagine that must be pretty exciting for you and the team. You know, ASX listed New Zealand based company striking a deal with one of the biggest tech companies in the world. Well, I don't know if they're one of the biggest in the world these days, but a big technology player. What's the details on that partnership? And I guess, how did you position Straker to win that deal over, all of your competitors?
Yeah, sure. Look, so, I think they probably would be one of the biggest. It's certainly one of the big players in AI, and I think that's quite important around this deal. So traditionally, IBM have had, multiple suppliers around the world. So, I don't know how many, 20 or whatever, in different countries. They wanted to consolidate that. And basically what we did was we acquired a company in Barcelona in Spain in 2018. They had IBM as a customer and a regional relationship, so they were doing the Spanish for them. We were able to take that relationship and then get a relationship with the IBM head office in terms of the people that dealt with their translation services globally. We were able to show them our technology, how it uses AI to get efficiencies and streamline the process, and how we could actually deliver a global service to them. And we went through a full RFP, and we won that as a sort of global service provider across the whole IBM group. So it's a really significant deal. There's not many companies, as you say, in sort of ASX listed Australasia, for example, who can pull off a deal, a global supply agreement with one of these large tech players. So, it's fantastic work. I think it showed that we had an enterprise sales team that could deliver those sorts of outcomes. And it is a huge opportunity. We're having to scale. I think we said at the time we had to hire about 40 people to onboard. It's driving huge volumes through our platform. And we're working with IBM on some, AI related content. Work that we're doing, we're doing lots of integration into their platform. So a really, really exciting opportunity for us.
It's an interesting one, that Spanish acquisition. I've heard of company acquisitions for their technology. I've heard of acqui-hires where companies get acquired for their talent. But this is the first time I think I've heard of a company being acquired for the relationships it has. That's an interesting strategy, but obviously one that's paid off.
Yeah, and they're not the only one that's done it. And again, I think if you look at the industry, the reason is people have these really tight relationships with quality over many years with their translation provider. And they know that there's a better way to do it. They know that they need more technology, but they hold on to these small relationships because they're scared that there might be some sort of quality issues. And I think once you start to prove people that the technology actually delivers better quality outcomes, then people will break free from those relationships. But in the meantime, we've been out there acquiring a few companies for those types of global relationships. And it is absolutely a strategy.
So, Grant, you mentioned that you've just completed a capital raise of about $20 million. What are you planning to use these funds for?
Yeah, so actually in total it'll be about $25 million. I think it should be an announcement today, I think, because of the retail offer.
Oh, nice. Market-leading news.
Equity Mates breaking news. Love to see that.
Yeah, I think it was well flagged that today was when we announced
it. No, we'll take it.
of the entitlement offer. So we did a $20 million institutional placement, and $5 million as a retail entitlement offer. So we'll have $25 million. So there's a few things that we're doing. So one, we took out some debt to buy a company in January of this year. So we'll pay about $8 million. We'll go back down to pay down that debt. Now, the reason that we took out debt at the time, we didn't think that the market had fully appreciated the size of the IBM deal that we announced in November, December. And we thought that they would start to appreciate it more as we started to get into our results, which I think has started to happen. So rather than doing a capital raise at that time, we took on some fairly simple debt, bank type debt. And we were able to use that to make the acquisition we wanted to make and then do an equity raise now when the market had sort of appreciated some of the other news that we have. So that's going down. So that'll leave us. We had about $7 million in the bank. So that leaves us sort of, you know, a net sort of $19 million or something that we have now got to deploy. So we still are on the acquisition trail. We see some great opportunities, especially post-COVID, to accelerate our growth even further through some strategic acquisitions. And then we've got some really significant growth, organic growth strategies that we're implementing, so that we'll invest into. So, yeah, I think that at the moment that's the main reason. But I think, you know, having a strong balance sheet in a post-COVID world is a smart thing to do, because there's going to be all sorts of opportunities, and we're starting to see those start to arise. And we want to be in a good position to take advantage of them. Not everybody's going to get through COVID as well. You know, some have survived through some of the subsidies. There's been certain projects that have got people into certain places. And as they start to run out, we think that there will be some fantastic opportunities to really build some value.
So, Grant, it's all, you know, there's a lot of positive, elements to this story so far. The revenue growth, the big deals, raising money, acquisitions, like it seems everything's going well. But when you think about online translation services, you do think of some pretty big names, you know, Google Translate, Microsoft Translator. Some of the biggest companies in the world are building translation software and, you know, having incredible pricing power and incredible scale. How do you think about competing with some of those, I guess, big, scary tech companies at the top end of town?
And that's a question, obviously, as you can imagine, I get asked a fair bit and always have been asked. So one thing is that, you know, we were asked that in 2010, right? People were surely by now, you know, Google will own everything by, you know, 2015, you know. And obviously they didn't, because you still need humans in the mix. Humans, any AI-driven outcome needs curation from humans to keep it accurate. And if you just let a machine go off and do two or three iterations, it'll start to produce rubbish. So you've got to have the right platform that captures the human and the machine element. A lot of the big tech companies, that they don't want to be involved in all this human part of it. They don't want to be involved in the services side of what's going on and the complexities around that, right? They just want to, a lot of the times, just do a consumer-based product or just a sort of base for a B2B solution. So for example, just, hey, look, here's some initial machine translation for your B2B solution, a bit like, hey, here's a cloud storage type thing. So we don't see them really as competing, and we don't come across them in that way at all in the market. So the question is, how do you, as machines start to play a bigger part in this industry, how do you get the right commercial outcomes? And so what we do in our platform is that what we do, which is very different to everybody else, is rather than doing pricing and paying vendors on a content volume, which is the industry average, like this is how many pages we've got, this is how many words, we can do it on the time it takes to actually get that completed. So if a human goes twice as fast, but they're paid the same hourly rate, so they're paid a fair hourly rate for their skill set, but they go twice as fast, that translation's taken half the time and cost half as much. So a very simple piece of logic that everybody thinks, well, why doesn't everybody do that? Because it's very difficult to actually build that. And it's taken us 10 years of continual iteration and building up massive data sets that actually improve the speed of those humans. So that's why I think, you know, that's more important. How's this going to play out in terms of machines and humans together?
So, Grant, before we move to our discussion on people and culture, we will just take a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
So, Grant, one of the things that we often hear from many of the fund managers we talk to is the difficulty of understanding management, how they think about growing their company, and particularly around people and culture. But yet it's such an integral part to making investment decisions as retail investors. So we always like to involve a discussion around that in these interviews. So let's start at the top. Do you have a leadership philosophy as CEO?
I do. And again, can I encapsulate that in a couple of words? Maybe not, but I have a philosophy that to grow as a company, we need to have a distributed model of business owners in each region, especially when you're as global as we are, who are responsible for making the daily decisions that they need to make whilst operating under a shared services model for the parts of our business where we can get operating leverage. So there's a great book called Copeland, of all places. I don't know if you've ever heard of this book, but it's always, everybody goes, what is Copeland about? Is it about Coca-Cola, or is it about white line fever? And never sure, but it's actually about Coke Industries, which is K-O-C-H, and this guy, Bill Coke, who is one of the world's 10 richest men. And it is a fantastic book. I think if you're a student of business, it's a really interesting book. And I'm not saying I agree with all of his political philosophies or anything else, but one thing they did when they grew was that they made sure that every company that they acquired, every business unit they set up, somebody in there owned the P&L. Somebody was responsible for, getting up every day and being in charge of the revenue and those decisions on the ground. And so that's why we have a structure of business units. But on top of that, what you've got to have is a core philosophy that we have across the group, which is we're working on the same platform. So when we acquire a company, we want everybody in that company using our tools, using the same platform. And that way, it doesn't matter if somebody is in Barcelona, if somebody is in Tokyo, if somebody's in Philadelphia or Auckland, wherever they are, they know what's going on with a customer's project and we can share resources. So that's a core kind of structural philosophy, I guess.
Yeah. So, Grant, you've mentioned a couple of times that Straker is truly a global business. And, if you go on your website and you're looking at where you've got offices, it really is across the world. And at the same time, you're also acquiring companies around the world. You mentioned that Spanish company that you acquired in 2018, and there's been a few others along the way. How do you build and maintain a culture as you expand globally and you integrate these acquired companies into the building?
Yeah, look, and it's one of the issues with COVID, right? You get this cultural drift because you're not going into see people, and you're not getting that interaction with the team. And part of it is around a COVID specific part of this, I think, and, you know, how you're maintaining it through COVID, and then what would you do normally? I think you've got to use the tools that you can do. So what we have done is we use Slack a lot, so everybody can communicate, obviously. We have a lot of engagement with the team around certain days or whatever's going on. You know, it might be some Spanish day and everybody will wear sombreros around the world and talk to people. Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, for me, it's always communication is always the key to that cultural team. And I guess we're lucky in that we've got good team leads, that we've had a lot of engagement over the last few years. We've done lots of traveling. We tend to buy companies and cities that are really good to go out in normally.
good due diligence.
So Barcelona, Madrid, you know, Tokyo. We did buy one in Utah, where you don't go out quite so much, but there's great skiing. So, you know, it's all a trade off. There's got to be some benefits to growing these companies. I think, yeah, it is interesting. And we have some fantastic people across, you know, I think the average age is maybe mid-30s. I think if I look back at it, we've got some dashboards going on, sort of a really diverse, super diverse, certainly, 50-50, male, female, all sorts of ethnicities and sort of, you know, population types of the population, everything else. So, it's great to have a team like that and to get everybody's viewpoints to understand, you know, what they see in work and what's important to them, and different people in different geographies sort of value different things and have different structures. In Europe, you've got a very socialist kind of social structure that supports people. In the US, obviously, maybe not so much, and it's a different type of way that you work, and somewhere in between in Australasia. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
So the software industry is notorious for being difficult to retain talent, and we imagine that it would be even harder in a market like New Zealand where there aren't as many engineers as, say, Sydney or Silicon Valley. So how do you approach this challenge as CEO?
Yep, so one thing that we did in New Zealand a few years ago, we set up an office in Gisborne down on the east coast of New Zealand. So one of the problems we've got, and I'm sure you've got it in Sydney, nobody in Auckland could actually afford to buy a house. No, even the well-paid could not afford to buy a house. House prices here are just ludicrous. And so what we did is we looked around in the regions of New Zealand, down in Gisborne, a beautiful surf beach, one of the fantastic surf beach. Lovely place to live. You know, everybody can cycle to work and live. So we asked the team, what we should do. Should we set up an office a bit further out of Auckland or, you know, change the working policy? And they said, look, if we had an office in the regions, that'd be great. Really low house prices at the time down in Gisborne. So, we have about 20 people that moved down there that enabled a whole bunch of our developers with families and stuff to move there and buy a house. And that's, I guess, been well received, and there's not, you know, there's not a lot of other tech companies down there, for example. So it's somewhere where we've built a really good culture, and it's an option for the team. And that was, you know, very deliberate in terms of trying to create opportunities for our staff to get on the housing ladder, and have a better sort of family social structure. So again, the other outcome is that they haven't had to go and just keep changing jobs just to pay a mortgage, for example. You know? So, you know, you can go and get more money, but all that's doing is paying some great bit more. You're not getting anything else out of it. They've got that balance, I would hope, and that's been successful. We have an apprenticeship program, but taking on younger or people who have come out of other industries and trying to get them trained up and then accelerating them quite quickly once we know that they've got in there. So we have, been reasonably good. New Zealand's coming under pressure now, I think, in terms of the lack of immigration, where a lot of the resources would have come in, and we don't really have the education system here that, in my view, is putting enough kids out with the right skills either. So so at the moment, it's not too bad. I've heard a few other stories around about the place, but we're reasonably in reasonably good shape.
Grant, I'm getting, I guess, a picture of the organization that you're building. You know, you're acquiring companies in cities that you want to go out in, Tokyo, Madrid, Barcelona. You've got a company that can get you to the ski fields in Utah. You've moved an office down to the coast in New Zealand. You're really building a very nice life as well as a very nice company.
And that's, you know, and that's one of the things. I think they had the top 50 places to work in New Zealand. And we didn't make it top 50 tech companies. I don't know. Somebody just, some recruitment crowd just came up with a list of 50, right? And I'm like, how are we not in there? Because, you know, you can go literally work right on a bloody surf beach, or you could be, going around. So, you know, look, and that's, you know, and that's all part of it. I mean, often when you're buying a company, you don't, you know, generally get to pick too much where it might be if it's the right value. And but we have been lucky in some of the locations that we've ended up with companies in 2019. You know, we had our Japanese guys were fantastic. I was up there on a sort of rugby tour with a couple of mates, and it does pay off sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, Grant, at the start of this, you mentioned how Meryn, your wife, and you co-founded the business in 1999. What are we talking? 22 years later, you guys continue running it today as CEO and COO, respectively, which is, you know, as close a, you know, co-founder relationship as you can have. You know, Bryce and I are co-founders. We haven't quite put 22 years into it yet. So I guess we want to get your advice at this point. You know, how do you manage the relationship between co-founders when you've also got such a close personal relationship?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's actually about having different skills. You know, Meryn's a very talented woman, and I think you know, she bought a lot of those. When I bought all the development skills early on and maybe some of the sales skills, she was very much, you know, into that business side. She's got a, degree in business. And so she drives a lot of that, and I do a lot of the business stuff. So early on, obviously, we were both able to concentrate on different things but be very aligned. And that certainly before we had kids, we didn't start having kids till 2005. You know, it was great fun because we could go around the world and travel together and work together and sort of have, you know, really enjoy that sort of freedom before the kids come along and lock you down a bit. So we have gone through that and it is hard, and sometimes it's very hard when you're both sort of really work. Even now we will both work late at nights, and you've got to manage that with your family. And I think we've had a reasonable balance of doing that. My main thing would be make sure that you both have complementary skills that end up with a better outcome. If you're both exactly the same, it's probably much harder.
Well, Grant, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. You know, we really enjoy unpacking companies that we haven't come across before and that are providing, you know, great value to society out there. So thank you for your time. We do finish with three final questions that we ask all of our CEOs. So that is around future plans. What does the next 12 months hold for Straker, and what is the product pipeline?
Yep. So if you look at sort of what we said around our full year results, you know, we're obviously given guidance, 50 million and getting IBM onboarded and, you know, working through that process, quite significant. We're also integrating LingoTech, which is a SaaS-based company that we acquired in January. So they have a strong underlying SaaS model, and we're looking to grow some of that SaaS revenue. Again, we are not going to be a 100% SaaS company, but we see it as a great way to have a sort of solid base in the business. Focusing on that, hopefully COVID, it's already starting to be a little bit less of an issue in other parts of the world. I think down here at the moment, it's obviously causing a bit few issues, but you know, the US seems to be opening up, so we can start to go to conferences and we can start to drive marketing campaigns again, in-person marketing campaigns. So, and sales activity in Europe. So that's going to be, I think, our big drivers over the next 12 months.
And Grant, if you think about the risks to your business, you're a global business, you're a growing business, but there's always things that can make it come unstuck. So looking at your business now, what would be the biggest risk at the moment?
Yeah, I guess you've just got to put risks into different buckets. There's all sorts of technology risks going around, I think, for a lot of businesses, and I think we're mitigating a lot of those. So I'm not so worried. I think in terms of making sure we have all the right resources, I think resourcing is going to be an issue over the next 12 months for a lot of companies. So especially growth focused companies that onboarding staff fast enough to keep up with the growth, I think is an area. They're probably the two that I would think about at the moment as being the sort of major risk.
And then to close out, Grant, if you were to think about where Straker will be in the next 10 years, what does success look like for you?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I said earlier, it'd be great to be in the top 10 and to really be right up there. For us, what I've always tried to do and one of the things that's guided us through, I think when you talked about Merrin and I earlier, is we've always wanted to build a big technology-driven company out of Australasia. Out of New Zealand, out of Australia, just we've always wanted to do that because we think that that's what New Zealand and Australia need. We need tech companies that are punching out around the world, not just New Zealand and Australia, just consumers of other big tech products out there. So I would hope that we've got a global leader in this sort of language communication space. That's based down here, and that's part of why we're a listed company as well. We want to have that framework right. That's what, and if we're doing that and we're employing people in the region and we're selling that around the world, I think that's, that's what we want our companies to be doing. And that's the reason, ultimately, that you want to start a company. If you just want to start a company just to make money, you'd probably import because it'd be a lot easier and you could sell it, right? But it's much harder to export, and it's much harder to export technology. But once you get there, it's way more valuable to society, I think.
Well, Grant, as I said, it's been a pleasure, and we thank you for coming on Equity Mates and sharing the journey of Straker with us. As I said, we're always interested in new companies. There's plenty on the ASX to work through, and we appreciate you sharing your thoughts on leadership and culture as well, as we know that that's an important part of understanding a company as a retail investor. So, as I said, absolute pleasure, and thank you very much.
My pleasure to be here, guys, and thanks for having me on.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Switching to Shopify helps you sell smarter at every stage of your business. Take full control of your brand with your own custom online store.
Wow, looks amazing.
Find more customers with our easy-to-use marketing tools.
Piece of cake.
And let the best converting checkout on the planet do its thing. Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Switch to Shopify today for a $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.